After the release of Sheer Heart Attack, Queen was broke. Roger Taylor couldn't even get enough together for a small down payment on a flat for his new family. They told him don't hit the drums too hard, too, because we can't afford drum heads. I believe. I don't know if that's a true story or not. But anyways, they realized that something needed to be done and done quick. The band quickly changed management and they got themselves free from some bad business dealings. Their new manager, John Reed, told them to just get in the studio and make the best album that you can make. And I'm going to square the financials. Just go make some great music. The resulting album is nothing short of monumental. We are speaking, of course, A Night at the Opera. While the songs move through several genres, they all had that unmistakable Queen sound. And on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, we're going to give you the lowdown on the making of this classic album, as well as discuss its legacy. We're also going to tell you once and for all, we're going to settle this once and for all, how Queen got their very unique vocal sound. We're also going to be giving away a free CD of A Night at the Opera by Queen to one lucky member of our live studio audience. So you don't want to miss this show. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Welcome back, moms and dads, boys and girls, and children of all ages to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, where we bring you great, interesting, and wildly entertaining music talk. We pick a subject each week. Sometimes it's a versus, like Eddie Van Halen versus Jimi Hendrix. Sometimes it is a top 10 songs that made people want to have babies. A topic like that. Sometimes it's a topic like, I don't know, the greatest cover songs of all time. Or topics like maybe the children of classic rockers who are putting out music right now. In any case, we pick some kind of crazy topic like that and we go around, give you the facts, the real resources on it, as well as sort of mix it up amongst ourselves here and interject a lot of fun along the way. And if you're joining us live, thank you so much. We also mix it up with our live studio. Yeah.
I hope they're live. Sort of,
Yeah, exactly. sorry, guys. I'm a little messed up because right before we started, I broke the internet. And you didn't notice because it caused a time freeze.
Oh.
You know, you thought you were just sitting, you were just doing the internet, but what happened is you're like, and everything stopped. I fixed it. Took me about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then everything reset itself. So now you're back. So, you know, these are the things that happen. I want to give a shout out to Wolf's Customs. Wolfscustoms.online. They do great. And I mean, really great, really unique stuff with your musical instruments, with different finishes and designs and things like that. So check them out. Go to wolfscustoms.online. RockRageRadio.com is a place you want to go to download the app and listen to great music 24/7, as well as getting to hear the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus and Hot Licks with Lily Six.
I am on Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It's an awesome show. I do interviews and play music, and that's what I got.
Okay, good. so you definitely want to check that out. Our websites are LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com as well as LouLombardiMusic.com. This gives you access to our Inner Circle group where we do this show live, and you get access to winning things like we're going to be giving away a CD tonight. LouLombardiMusic.com, LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com, lots of cool stuff there, music, exclusive music, as well as our private Facebook group where we just have an awesome time, guys. Just it's all about the music. Am I doing something bad?
No, okay. I was just making faces at everything.
Oh, okay.
I was matching what you were saying.
I'm like, oh, man, I must be really screwing up.
No.
So this thing right here. There's a little bit of a glare, but this is a CD copy. And by the way, I just read this is state-of-the-art mastering by Bob Ludwig.
Oh, Bob Ludwig. Yeah. He's very good, you know.
So we're going to be giving this away to, we're going to tell you what to do. We're going to have you probably pick a number, do something like that, and we're going to tell you. So don't, nobody start doing things right now in the comments.
No.
Like last time.
And please go on to the inner circle for this one, right?
Yeah. Okay. You have to be in the, you have to be part of the inner circle. You got to be in the inner circle, in order to be able to win the CD, A Night at the Opera. And you do that by going to LouLombardiMusic.com or LouDiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
Here we go. Come on now.
Lily is here, Rock Rage Radio Lily. Mm-hmm. And Lily, did you do anything fun or interesting this weekend?
I did. I went to the Irish Festival in Sandcastle, which is in Pittsburgh, PA. And I had some food and drink, specifically Guinness and gin and Irish stew. Didn't hear any of the bands. Didn't stay as long to hear any of the bands, but I'm sure they were great. I know it was the Bastard Bearded Irishman and the Wild Geese that are actually two really great bands. And I also saw the band Fozzy at Jurgles last night.
And how was that?
Good. I mean, I'm not a Chris Jericho fan. I know I'm going to be condemned for that, but they were good.
He's married to that DJ on Sirius, Tracy Guns.
Oh.
No, not Tracy Guns. Not Shannon that... Guns.
Oh, okay.
Tracy Guns.
He's married to Tracy Guns. Did you know that? No, he's married to Shannon Guns.
Hey,
that's already... new.
See, okay, see, this is what that. We're going to do. We talked about this before the podcast, and we're changing the name right now to a podcast. Okay. The podcast is now called Wasted on the Web.
Yeah, apparently.
Cause I should have, when I describe the podcast, I need to include the fact that there's like libations going on.
I drink
on.
To that.
I love that you said libations.
He said booze.
So, you know, our information for you guys on this stuff might be questionable. Oh, my God. I started out really good, really professional with that introduction.
Well, it just gets worse.
And then
yeah, right down the toilet.
Done.
Right down the toilet. These things happen.
Eat it. I got to go to the toilet.
Oh, jeez. Look at this.
Oh, my gosh. Well, obviously, we were talking about that show earlier.
Yeah. I forgot I have Archie Bunker in here.
Archie!
Oh.
Hey, Archie!
I'm playing with
him. I'm playing with him.
He's. Right. I thought you were fixing the internet again.
The internet was broken. I just fixed it.
Again.
Okay.
Bingo.
All right. We're Ludini.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you think of that? Oh, I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to invent that.
Okay.
And then we have Pittsburgh Kevin.
Yes, yes.
And what's
everybody,
going on, Pittsburgh Kevin?
What's going on? Oh, listen, you guys have your things going on. I just want to announce to everybody that every night I'm in my apartment, so that's where I'll be.
I know, I hear you up there.
Oh, I'm clog dancing. I'm taking clog dancing lessons. Can you hear that? No, stop that. No, it's a little more. It's the clog dancing going on. Is that a leprechaun?
I saw him.
I thought you were from Canada. I'm sorry.
A boot.
No,
a boot.
Not good
so
at the Canadian.
What's this podcast about?
Do we even know?
Mm-mm. Okay, we don't even know what we're talking. We're talking about A Night at the Opera. So what we're going to do is we're going to just jump in with Lily V6 here.
Yes.
And have her kind of give us the sort of like background lowdown on the hoedown.
The hoedown.
They were going to call the album Hoedown.
The album
doesn't match.
But they said we're going to call it A Night at the Opera. Yeah. It's a hoedown.
Yeah.
Anyway, A Night at the Opera, Queen, November 21st, 1975. Fourth studio album by British rock band Queen, produced by Roy Thomas Baker, who we talked about on another podcast about producers. It was reportedly the most expensive album ever recorded at the time of its release. It was £40,000 or $500,000 today.
Boy, £40,000. How did they like even pick it up and put it on the truck to ship it?
Pounds is British money.
Sterling pounds.
Sterling.
Named after the Marx Brothers film of the same name, A Night at the Opera was recorded at various studios across a four-month period in 1975. And they became good friends with the film star Groucho Marx, to the point where Marx sent the band a letter praising their 1976 album, A Day at the Races. Hmm. Marx also invited Queen to visit him at his L.A. home in March 77, 5 months before he died. The band thanked him and performed 39 a cappella. The cover artwork of the album, which Lou has there, it features the band's logo, which was designed by Mercury on a white background. And then, of course, the next album was A Day at the Races.
Get it closer to the camera.
Featuring a similar design, but on a black background.
I know.
Lou explained earlier the management issues. Queen had received almost none of the money that they earned for the previous albums, so they ended their contract with them and did not work with the studio anymore. Yeah, I mean, you know, the people suck. They employed a complex production that extensively used multi-track recording, and the songs incorporated a wide range of styles. You're really testing me on paying attention, such as ballads, music hall, Dixieland, hard rock, and progressive rock influences. Aside from their usual equipment, Queen also utilized a diverse range of instruments such as double bass, harp, harp, ukulele, and more. And we know all that stuff. The album was recorded at 7 different studios over a period of 4 months. In contrast, Sheer Heart Attack had been recorded at 4 different studios. Queen spent a month during the summer of 1975 rehearsing in a barn at which would become Ridge Farms Studio in Surrey, which is a super fun scene in Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie, if you've ever seen it. They required multi-tracking for their complex vocal harmonies, which typically consisted of May singing lower registers, Mercury singing
middle. Don't give the whole thing away. I'm going to talk about that.
Registers and Taylor performing his higher parts. You can go ahead now.
We don't want to. I have something special for that.
Go ahead.
So one of the things we're going to do before we get to what Miles just do now, since Lily brought it up, is we're going to settle the. There's been so many people, so much myth surrounding the Queen vocal sound. You know, they did this, they did that. They pitched up their voices, they sped it up, they slowed it down, you know, they sang it in a bathtub or whatever.
Innovative.
Here's what they did. And this is, I don't play a lot of sound clips, but I'm going to play this because I really want to, because I don't want to say it wrong. And I don't want people saying that, you know what you're talking about. This is directly from Brian May and Roger Taylor. They're going to explain it to you. So just shut up your face and listen.
The vocal harmonies, you know, on a Queen record are going to provide it with unity, regardless of what the kind of, you know, individual style of a particular song is. You know, there's something that's, you know, instantly identifiable about what they do.
The three voices that we had blended instantly and sounded very big.
They interacted quite magically, and we all had different qualities in our voices. And I had a sort of high, searing quality. Freddie had an incredibly powerful quality in most ranges. And Brian had a very nice quality in the lower range. And so the three made a very good combination. But what we would do is we would not take a single part each. We would all together sing every part.
So as soon as the three of us sang a line, it already sounded quite big. You double-track that, it sounds very big, and then we would sing the next line and the next line and the next line.
So you really were looking after both ends of the sort of spectrum there. In fact, all ends. You were covering everything. So it came out particularly strong. And that was really part of the Queen sound, I think, the fact that the three of us sang every part.
Okay, so they all sang all the parts. Just three-part harmony. John Deacon did not sing. And so they all sang the parts, all three parts. So Roger is not only singing his part, he's singing Brian's part, and he's singing Freddie's part. So they just kept on tracking and say they would do a line, track it, do a line. And then they would double-track all of that stuff so you would have a nice stereo thing. And that is the Queen vocal sound. I don't know of any other band that does or did that. Maybe probably since, but it was truly unique to them. Lots of interesting production techniques are employed. And we're going to talk a little bit about Brian, what Brian May did on a lot of the songs as well. So we're going to go through song by song and give a breakdown on it. But one of the things I wanted to talk about with you guys is, like, when you listen to this record, what's the first thing that comes to your mind in terms of, like, influence?
Oh, I actually wrote that down. Hold on. Wait a minute. I remember doing something like that, didn't I?
So just whatever you think. Like, what?
Well, I thought, like, other bands, I thought it was very progressive. It's I guess, early in, like, kind of an early version of progressive rock. So this is 1975, and a lot of the songs aren't just your simple, you know, chorus, you know, lyrics, chorus, but it's broken up into different things. It really feel. So I thought like some of them, some of the songs had a Yes. They sounded like the band Yes. I thought there was some Kansas kind of sounding stuff in there. So I'm like, wow, this is like a really progressive band, which, you know, listening to their stuff on the radio, you would actually have to listen to the whole album.
This band too, like, really evolved, and we can talk about that. I mean, they like really were not, they were always chasing something new. We're done with that. We don't do that again. We're going to do this now.
Right.
That was Mercury's way.
Yeah.
What about you, Lily? What do you think of when you hear this record? What kind of goes through your head?
Well, obviously, the first song I always think of with this album is Bohemian Rhapsody. So I'm thinking he obviously loved opera and jazz for that sort of thing.
I think the Beatles. I think that the Beatles started
very heavy
this type of thing, especially with these, especially a crazy thing in the beginning where they have the three songs that are kind of all together, you know, and you hear, you know, like there's something in there that reminds me a little bit of When I'm 64 by Paul McCartney, you know what I mean? Like there's all this sort of do, and you know, that whole, you know, almost kind of Dixieland kind of thing going on. And the Beatles were the sort of like kind of said, you know, it's okay in rock to like, you know,
go outside the box.
Play around.
Outside the box a little bit. Bring some of these other sounds in. And I think that that made it, you know, so then you, then, you know, you, then you've got Queen and Led Zeppelin and bands like that. But Queen really has that thing. And the Beatles had great vocals too. Great vocal harmonies. Mm-hmm. Like really good. That's something that I think people forget about the Beatles. They had a really good vocal harmonies. But what Queen did was they evolved that. Like they took like everything the Beatles were doing like to like that next level.
Right.
You know. So some of this reminds me of Sgt. Pepper's in some places and things like that. It just has that because it's so good. You know what I mean? And it is so outside the box. And even the songs that are quirky and stuff are like super catchy and super memorable and, you know, you are very, 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 very enjoyable to listen. So
Well, it was really interesting to hear their explanation of how they got the vocals, because as I'm listening to the album, you know, I'm a big Les Paul fan, meaning the artist himself and his multi-tracking him and Mary Ford. And I'm like, how did they do that? Because I know how Les did it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how did they do the same thing? But it was really interesting to hear them explain, you know, they all sang together. And I'm like, oh, that's what made it so distinctive.
Yeah. All singing, all three parts. Definitely, you know, there's a progression. This is one of the things that they said in the classic, there's a classic albums documentary, if you haven't seen it, and it's free on YouTube if you want to watch it, is that they were, one of the things they were doing was they were playing the studio. And this is a thing that bands, this is the Beatles, of course, like invented that, you know, with like leaning on the tape machine to get the flanging effect and, you know, doing stuff like that. What was the, you know, the constant like overdubbing and layering and things like this. So the Beatles were the sort of first ones to really kind of play the studio. And again, Queen, and like, what's so interesting is like that has continued on and on and on and on. And I was recently listening to a Rick Beato talk about, he was playing the top 10 on the top 10 alternative rock songs on Spotify. And he was kind of going through them and talking about them. And what the thing that stuck out in my mind the most was like all these bands today really have that. They're completely manipulating the studio, like almost to the point where you might say there's really not that much of a song there. What you're really hearing is like all kind of crazy production techniques that we can do because of computers and stuff like that. So they're really kind of digging deeper. But that begins way back with the Beatles and Queen and Pink Floyd and bands like that. Really kind of Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix is really well known for. So there's people that said for a long time that people didn't even know what he had done, that they couldn't even duplicate some of the things he did. They don't know what he was doing. But this is something that I thought was really interesting because as an artist, you do want to do that. You get into the studio and you go like, oh, we can do what? We could take that and put that over here and cut that in half and slow down, speed this part up and make it sound like a sousaphone or whatever. And you're like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
So it is, and there are just, and especially today with the way music is produced, they're just, it's just up to your imagination, like what you can come up with. But the cool thing about Queen is that while they were doing that, this is called talent. Mm-hmm. You've got four incredibly talented guys. Even though Roger Deakin doesn't sing, he's a songwriter, too. So mm-hmm. he contributed songs to this. And maybe we could talk about who wrote what here in a minute. But but that is real freaking real talent, like really having a song craft, having and really having your vocals together. That's something, man. If you're in a band, if you could have killer harmony that never goes out of style, everybody loves that. It doesn't matter. There was harmony from the beginning, and there's metal bands with you know, that do like great harmonies. Stuff like that. Yeah. Like everybody, it's something that like the human ear just.
It likes it.
Yeah, it likes mm-hmm. it. It's like, it's like chocolate or something. You know what I mean? Like almost everybody likes chocolate. But in any case, so that is that. So there's the combination of not just playing the studio, but also bringing in amazing music, amazing musicianship, amazing vocals. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. You know, that's it's like a real tour de force. And we'd love to hear more of that type of stuff today. So do we want to go song by song, or was there more you wanted to add in your sort
I just
of...
have one little snippet here. The album was completed a week before the group were to embark on their Night at the Opera tour. This resulted in a 36-hour mixing session. Because they wouldn't have time to rehearse the set list before touring. But due to time constraints, the group only had 3.5 days to rehearse, with 4 hours taken off to shoot the music video for Bohemian Rhapsody. So the tour spanned 1975 and 1976 and covered the UK, the US, Japan, and Australia. So they had zero time to rehearse. I mean, I don't know how many times bands rehearse here for shows, but I kind of figure they probably need a little more time
When you go out on tour, and I don't know if this is still the thing, but I know for many years it was 2 weeks of rehearsal.
Okay.
You know, and it was like your job. You got mm-hmm. up in the morning and you went to the rehearsal space and you went, you know, it was all day. That's what you worked on, yep. You know. And bands practice a little bit of inside, under a peek under the hood, if you will. Bands practice what they say, going to say in between the songs.
Really?
And who's going to stand where. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come over and lean on you during the guitar solo. And you're going to, mm-hmm. they have that. No, you don't.
It's not ad-libbed.
Let me tell you who ad-libs that type of stuff. Dave Grohl. And you see him, it's all over YouTube. There's like all these Dave Grohl fails on stage, because falling off the stage, knocking the drum set over, all kind of stuff like that. God love him. I love that freaking guy. He's awesome. But he don't rehearse that stuff. And that's what happens. You want to avoid stuff like that happening. So you work that stuff out. And if you're a band, like a big band, like Queen or Metallica mm-hmm. or one of these bands with a big show and everything, you got to know, like, when something cues so that flash pot goes off or this thing
happens. Your hair don't catch on fire.
Yeah, your hair doesn't catch on fire.
So it's like a real job.
So they work all that stuff out. So I hope that doesn't disappoint too many people that, you know, they go out and see your favorite band and something they think is off the cuff is like, you know, if you go see a band, like if you were to follow them, it's pretty much the same. There's bands that aren't, but it's pretty much the same.
You start heckling the band. Hey, how's it going? Insert city here.
Hey, tell that guy to get out of here. just a little bit of that. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
That's all I got.
So let's go song by song on this thing.
Okay.
And check it out. So what is the first one that you have, Lily?
Death on Two Legs.
Yeah. What?
Two legs.
Two legs.
Not free, too.
That's crazy.
Two legs.
It can be referred to as Freddie Mercury's hate letter to Queen's first manager, Norman Sheffield, who for some years was reputed to have mistreated the band and abused his role as their manager from 72 to 75. He actually denied the allegations in his 2013 autobiography entitled Life on Two Legs, Set the Record Straight. And referred to copies of the original 1972 management contracts between Sheffield and Queen, which were included in the book as proof of his defense. Though the song never makes direct reference to him, after listening to a playback of the song at Trident Studios during the time of the album release, Sheffield was appalled and sued the band and the record label for defamation, which resulted in an out-of-court settlement, but also confirmed his connection to the song. Brian May stated that the band was somewhat taken aback at first by the bitterness in Mercury's lyrics, and described by Mercury as being so vindictive that May felt bad singing it. After the song came together, it was agreed that the author should have his way, and the song was recorded as written. And as with Bohemian Rhapsody, most of the guitar parts on the song were initially played on the piano by Mercury to demonstrate to May how they needed to be played on guitar. That seems sort of micromanaging. But during live performances, Mercury would usually rededicate the song to a real motherfucker of a gentleman. Other than on the live album, he said it was dedicated to a motherfucker I used to know. Death on Two Legs remained on the set list until and well into the Game Tour in 1980 and was then dropped. However, the piano introduction was played during the Hot Space and Works tour. So that was his FU. I guess I could say it again, huh? Fuck you. What's his face? So there's that.
Yeah. Sheffield, yeah. That's when John Reed came in and, like, really, that hurts so many bands. And there's a lot of bands that you go, like, whatever happened to that band? Well, they got some moron.
Yeah, managing.
You could totally screw them up, and then they were broke, and they were like, oh, we can't do anything now. We're done.
And they didn't probably want to go through that again.
Yeah, and then what happens is, and when there's sometimes there's long hiatus, the guys will go play with other people.
Right.
And, like, you know, it's you know, it falls apart. So, yeah. Yeah, that is a, it's a good jam, though.
Yeah, when I was listening to it, I was immediately propelled back into the early 70s because I was alive back then.
Oh, really. Yeah. Well, both of you are.
And just listening to the guitar, and it reminded me that I first got interested in the guitar after hearing Killer Queen and trying to figure out what that was. Mm. Is it a violin? What is going on there? And it was Brian May's Red Special. Which, if you guys are gearheads, that's his red guitar. That's all right. That's his red guitar that you often see him with.
Like 99.9%. Yes, unless he's playing acoustic or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And when he was a young man, a kid, he could not afford a guitar. So his father and he built that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he built that. The neck is actually the mantle, the wood from the mantle of his home.
Oh, yes, that's nice.
I also read that, I know a lot about this guitar.
Go ahead and talk about it, because this is really important. I wanted to kind of focus in on this anyway.
He wired it himself. He learned about electronics, wired it himself, but he wired it in such a way, after seeing Jeff Beck using feedback, he actually kind of constructed that guitar so it would feed back. So that's how he gets a lot of his sounds. But he has, just the way he has a wired in phase, out of phase for you musicians, you know, he has all these little switches. I had one, I had a Burns copy, and it was wired the exact same way. And there was just so many sounds you could get out of this guitar. But listening to this opening guitar solo on Death on Two Legs, it just reminded me of being a kid going, what is that? Now I know.
That was the other thing about Queen. You know, in addition to this insane, like, vocal thing that they did, that guitar sounded like nothing and
else.
Sounds like there's really nobody that can play like him because of his sound. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like just the way what he's able to coax out of it. And there is there's a very delicate song later on the album. I think it's Love of My Life.
Yeah.
Where there is just this touch of that guitar, and it's beautiful. It sounds like a crying violin or something
exactly.
in the background. It's,
right.
And just it's that guitar, and you know how he's able to manipulate it, how he's able to like really leverage it for like to get the most out of it. Great. So that's the first track. So what's that? By the way, we're gonna go long, guys. You guys are watching live. We start a little bit late, so don't worry.
Nobody panic.
Nobody panic. First rule in a crisis situation. And don't forget, we're gonna be giving this. What movie is it from?
We'll
you
say
forgot
again.
The first rule in a crisis situation.
Twins,
yeah.
Oh, very good, Lily.
Yeah, it's from Twins. But we're going to be giving away a copy of Night at the Opera. So stick around, guys. Stick around. So what do you got?
The next one is Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon.
Now, wait a minute. Isn't that a song by the Kinks? Lazing on a Sunday.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's sunny. It's not
okay.
Sunday. See, it's
you're
a
good.
Fine. That's how they
scary.
Got it.
You know, I
that's
was before we talk about the song. I have an idea for a future podcast.
Oh boy!
Famous songs that have the same name.
That's a good one. Yeah, I know a lot of those.
Yeah, like The Pretender. Every, when I first saw, the Pretender, the Foo Fighters, because Dave Grohl's famous for covering everything.
Right.
I thought he covered the Jackson Brown song,
Guess
The
what?
Pretender. Nope.
Not so
Completely
much.
Completely different. No. Okay, go ahead, Lily.
Another song by Mercury. He played piano and performed all of the vocals. The lead vocal was sung in the studio and reproduced through headphones in a tin bucket elsewhere in the studio. A microphone picked up the sound from the bucket, which gives a hollow megaphone sound. The guitar solo is also reported to have been recorded on vocal track, as there were no more tracks to record on, as explained by producer Roy Thomas Baker during the classic album's documentary.
Roy Thomas Baker! He's one of the three name people!
Oh my goodness.
His name is Roy Thomas Baker, and I don't care who knows it!
He's got three names.
I hate all of
three names. Three of them.
I've only got two! He's got three!
You've got three, you just only used two.
Oh. It's a technicality, isn't it?
Like, I'm Lily Van Six. Just like that. There it is.
Wow.
There she blows.
Hey.
You said blow.
I did say that.
Are you done?
I'm done.
So let me tell you something.
Go ahead.
I'm listening to this song. One word comes to my mind. Whimsical.
Yes.
It's very whimsical.
It is a whimsical
now,
song.
It's like, I like to ride my bicycle.
After that, as I do with my fingers here, after that came two more words. And see if you agree with me. Monty Python.
Yeah.
Doesn't it have a very Monty Python feel to it?
Yes.
And I'm like, what were they doing?
And I was going, every sperm is sacred. Every sperm
I'm a lumberjack.
I'm a lumberjack.
Welcome to the nerdery.
I put on women's clothing and hang a rod in bars.
He puts on women's... Wait. Yeah, I'm like, wow. And I wonder if that was intentional. I wonder, not necessarily emulating Monty Python, but just that kind of British...
Kind of humor.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, when they get into Benny Hill, I might have to draw the line.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God.
Benny Hill was this like very subversive show that came on like Channel 22 or something like that after school.
BBC.
And it was on around that time. You got him from school. You're like kind of dicking around, you know, dinner's not ready yet. You know what I mean? You put something on. And like, so kids would watch it, but it had a lot of dirty jokes.
Adult humor to it.
I didn't watch it while it was new, just to clarify.
And I remember our health teacher, Mr. Shannon, lecturing us about it. He goes, I know some of you go home in the afternoons and watch Benny Hill.
Now, explain to people, we went to a
Christian high school. Yeah.
So Benny Hill was kind of
taboo.
I know.
I stopped that in eighth grade. I was done after that. With Catholic schools. Religious schools.
Yes. Oh, are we going to do it?
What I was going to do is give them
Let's wait a few more minutes. Yeah, let's give them a few more minutes. We only have four people watching, two talking.
Why are you such a tease?
Oh, my God.
If more people don't start watching, then
you get nothing.
I'm keeping this.
You get nothing.
Good day, sir.
You lose. I said good day.
All right, let's go.
You want to do the next one?
Oh, please.
Or is there something more you want to say about this?
I've got nothing unless you've
got
something.
No, I'm ready for the next one.
I'm in love with my car. And I actually am in love with my car, but it's amongst Roger Taylor's most famous songs in the Queen catalog. Song was initially taken as a joke by May, who thought that Taylor was not serious when he heard a demo recording. The lead vocals were performed by Taylor on the studio version and all released live versions. The revving sound at the conclusion of the song was recorded by Taylor's then current car, an Alfa Romeo. Fancy pants. The lyrics were inspired by one of the band's roadies, Jonathan Harris, whose Triumph TR4 was evidently the love of his life. The song is dedicated to him, with the album saying, dedicated to Jonathan Harris, a boy racer to the end. When it came down to releasing the album's first single, Taylor was so fond of his song that he urged Mercury to allow it to be on the B-side of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Wow.
Which it was. It generated an equal amount of publishing royalties for Taylor as the main single did for Mercury. The song was often played live during the 77 to 81 period. Taylor sang it from the drums while Mercury played piano and provided backing vocals. It was played in the Queen plus Paul Rogers tour in 2005 and the Rock the Cosmos tour in 2008. Taylor would again play the song for his concerts with the Cross and solo tours, where instead of drums, he played rhythm guitar, and I'm going to knock over my drinks.
This is another thing. They all sing songs.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're going to be talking about, a Brian May singing in a little bit here. I don't know where it's a kick-ass track. I think it's really cool.
Hey, it's fun.
Hey, Lou.
Yes.
You know me, right? You know some of the chords I've had, Lou.
Oh, yes.
I love those things. Lou, tell the audience. Hey, Lou. It's me, Pittsburgh Kevin. Tell the audience what my first car was.
It was a ambulance.
It was a Cadillac ambulance.
Do you name your cars?
Some of them.
Oh, okay. Mine's named. Mine's Roxy.
Yeah. This one is just Highlander because it's kind of a cool name.
It is.
Yeah.
I named mine after
the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. Highlander. So it's like this. Like, you've known like, I was a big Mustang fan. I had some really kick-ass Mustangs. So now it's like I was thinking about this today as I'm driving home in the Highlander. And I love the Highlander. But it's kind of like when you're younger and you're dating all those hot, for you, Lily, hot guys, for Lou and I, hot girls, blah, blah, blah. And then you get married and you just become very comfortable. And that's the way it is with this car. I'm like, you know what? This drive's nice.
I don't want to give up on this.
Okay, let's get to the next song.
All right, let's get to the next
song. You're my best friend.
Oh, thanks, Lily.
Aww.
Aww. I love you guys.
BFF forever.
I'm going to get necklaces. Was the first Queen single to be written by John Deacon. He composed it while he was learning to play piano and played the Wurlitzer electric piano, which Mercury called a horrible instrument in an interview once. On the recording, he overdubbed the bass guitar afterwards. The song was written for his wife, Veronica Tetzlaff. Gosh, that name. The song was released as the album's second single after Bohemian Rhapsody and was also a top 10 hit in the UK. The song would be performed live by the band from the Summer Gigs of 76 tour up until the end of the North American leg of the Game tour in 1980. It was then dropped from the rest of the tour and would not be played live again until after the death of Mercury. Hmm. It was actually used in several TV shows and films. Hot in Cleveland, Will and Grace, EastEnders, My Name is Earl, The King of Queens, Good Omens, The Breakup, and the end credits of I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, The Simpsons, Shaun of the Dead, Peter's Friends, The Secret Life of Pets, and the Family Guy episode Farmer Guy.
Wow.
And probably a lot of other things, too. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't know the song, right? Big hit off of this record. Yeah. What I love about this is, like, this is the probably most straight-up
pop.
Hit song.
Sure.
Like, you know, this is like, you know, straight up
radio friendly.
Yeah, radio friendly. It's got everything you need. It's got all the stuff we love about Queen in it. But it's a kind of like cut and dry.
It's in that three and a half minutes.
Something like that. You know what I mean? Exactly. It's like boom, boom, boom. Yeah. So like, you know, when they cried about the length of Bohemian Rhapsody, we're like, well, okay, but we put one on.
Simmer down now.
Okay, so next song.
Well, real quick while she's watching, Tracy Sampson, your birthday's tomorrow. Happy birthday.
Happy 60th. Birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
I'm sorry I started this.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mrs. Lily's mom.
I'm sorry, Mom.
Finish it up. Happy birthday
to you.
Anyway, the next song is 39, which is my age, was May's attempt to do sci-fi skiffle. 39 relates to the tale of a group of space explorers who embark on what is, from their perspective, a year-long voyage. And the nerdery is going to happen here soon, I'm sure. Upon their return, however, they realize that 100 years have passed because of the time dilation effect in Einstein's theory of relativity, and the loved ones they had left behind are now dead or aged.
Right.
May sings the song on the album with backing vocals by Mercury and Taylor. During live performances, Mercury sang the lead vocal. May had asked Deacon to play double bass as a joke, but a couple of days later, he found Deacon in the studio with the instrument, and he had already learned to play. So, challenge accepted.
Interesting.
George Michael performed 39 at the Freddie Mercury tribute concert on April 20th, 1992. Michael cited the song as his favorite Queen song, claiming that he used to busk it on the London Underground. Recently, Queen have included the song in the set list on the recent tours with Adam Lambert and before Lambert with Paul Rogers. And for all of these tours since 2005, it is sung and on his album by May. Sung on his album by May.
Something.
So, yes, that's all.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you bring up the double bass because I'm listening to it. I'm like, it has almost like a country music feel to it with that bass line.
Yeah.
You agree, Lou? Mm. Yeah. That's all I got.
Okay, cool. Also, not to be confused with the number 42, which is the purpose of life.
Right.
Right.
It's almost there.
For, you know, 42.
It's almost there.
It's 42.
Yes.
My God.
For those of you who are Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan.
Thanks for all the fish.
So long. And thanks for all the fish.
Next song. Sweet Lady.
What?
Yes.
No.
That's me. Oh, gosh.
Oh, come on.
Distortion-driven fast rocker written by May. According to an online source, Roger Taylor once said that because of its unusual time signature, Sweet Lady was the hardest song for him to play live on the drums. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay. The backing track was probably recorded live, as one can hear the wires on the snare drum of Taylor's kit vibrating along with Deacon's bass guitar riff.
Oh, cool, man. That's cool.
As told by Brian May lyrically, sorry, there's a buck.
I know.
As a lot of my stuff, it's about relationships and what I saw in my own relationships and the relationships of people around me, which I still really feel is the fundamental building material of our lives. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna cry. I'm not very good on politics on a grand scale, but I'm intrigued by what happens one-on-one between people. I think some of those are the strongest forces in our lives, so that's what the songs are about. The song would remain on Queen's live set to its last performance in June 1977. Like many Queen tracks performed live, the song has never been released on an official live album.
What's up, Winner?
Oh my gosh, you just love playing with that.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the Roger Waters? Yeah, the Roger Waters version of Queen. No,
that'd be interesting.
The Paul Rogers. Queen stuff. It's interesting.
And it was interesting because he doesn't try to sound like Freddie, but then it shows you just how good those songs are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
And I mean, Paul Rogers is an amazing singer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's a great singer for Queen, but he's a great singer.
I'm sorry. Real quick, before we do this thing. So, Sweet Lady, I'm listening to it. Tell me if I'm wrong. Doesn't it have kind of an old Rush feel to it? Just the changing.
Oh, my God.
Shut
you
up.
You have like Rush. Listen. What's it called?
Oh, sorry. Rush
Fever?
Right. Rush. What's that thing called?
Envy. Rush Envy. I wish I had Rush. I wish I had a Rush.
Oh, my God.
But no, am I correct? There's changing time signatures. There's a heavy guitar driven. Don't make me start yelling like I did about Go Your Own Way.
Oh, my God.
Man, I don't know.
All right.
If it was like Rush, I would hate it.
Oh, stop.
That's not exactly like Rush.
You like stuff that's like Rush. It's not Rush.
Oh, excuse me.
Which one of those was not a sound of Nice. Oh, you guys are too much fun. I'm having too much good time. We're just screwing around. I apologize.
All right, you going to do the giveaway?
Yeah. Let's
Come
do
on
the
now.
Okay.
Come on.
All right, everybody pay attention who's watching.
Please pay attention.
The Inner Circle.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We have a number written down here. We all know what it is. It is a number between 17 and 37.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want you to do is this number between 17 and 37. And we want you to put in the comments, pick one. You can't pick 10 numbers, Michael Goltz. just kidding. I love Michael. I'm just... put it in the comments, and then we're gonna do the next song, and then we'll check here in a minute. So go ahead, what do you got?
Ready, 1, 2, 3, go. Seaside Rendezvous, written by Mercury. It's notable for It's notable for the mock instrumental bridge section, which begins at around 51 seconds into the song. The section is performed entirely by Mercury and Taylor using their voices alone, which I did not know until I did my research on this. Mercury imitates woodwind instruments, including a clarinet, and Taylor mostly brass instruments, including tubas and trumpets, and even a kazoo. Wow. During this section, Taylor hits the highest notes on the album, C6. I don't know what that means. The tap dance segment is performed by Mercury and Taylor on the mixing desk with thimbles on their fingers. So this was one of those play things. Mercury plays both grand piano and jangle honky-tonk, whatever that is, too. I don't know what these things are.
C6 is the sixth octave above middle C.
Okay.
It's a vertebrae.
Sure.
I think I see my doctor.
My C6 a little out of whack.
And then you have a C section.
Well, if you go to a bad doctor, yes. Yes.
Okay, what's next?
We're on side two. Yes, yeah, side two now. The Prophet song.
Oh.
Wow, he just keeps sighing and making these noises, these gross noises. It was composed by May, the working title was People of the Earth. May explained that he wrote the song.
Like people of the Earth were like everywhere.
He wrote the song after a dream he had about a great flood. Dream. While he was recovering from being ill while recording the Sheer Heart Attack album, and is the source of some of the lyrics. The dream May had was about the Great Flood. Are we talking about, like, Noah?
Noah.
I guess. And lyrics have references from the Bible and Noah's Ark. Okay, yeah, account. He spent several days putting it together and includes a vocal canon sung by Mercury. The vocal and later... what are you sighing for?
We'll talk about it.
The vocal and later instrumental canon was produced by early tape delay devices. It is a heavy and dark number with a strong progressive rock influence and challenging lead vocals. At over 8 minutes in length, it is also Queen's longest studio song, not counting the untitled instrumental track on Made in Heaven. As detailed by May in a documentary about the album, the speed-up effect that happens in the middle of the guitar solo was achieved by starting a reel-to-reel player with the tape on it as the original tape player was stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Gunn, what do you have to say? Sorry, I gave you a paper.
That whole canon part, I lost me. If I have to hear Now I Know one more time!
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Yeah, that's why. I'm like, I get it. Oh, why? Yeah, I don't like repetition like that. And it hurt my ears.
So you don't like a lot of bands.
Well, okay, let's do one more, then we'll announce the wiener.
The wiener?
Well, now
we only have one person who picked the number.
Somebody's going to win!
Well, then I'm not giving it away.
What?
We might wait till next week.
Uh-oh.
I might wait till next week. Yeah. Okay. Come on, jerks.
Well, we'll do one more song.
Love of My Life.
All right. Oh. What was that?
One of Queen's most covered songs.
Is that what that was? I thought it was something else popping up.
I mean, there have been versions by many acts like Extreme featuring May, Scorpions, and Elaine Page. Mercury played piano, including a classical solo, and did all of the vocals with startling multi-track precision. May played harp, doing it chord by chord and passing the takes to form the entire part. Why are you doing that?
I'm playing the harp.
Gibson Hummingbird acoustic guitar, which he had bought in Japan, and his Red Special that you talked about earlier. May eventually arranged the song so it could be played on an acoustic 12-string for live performances, which I do love a 12-string. Love of My Life was such a concert favorite that Mercury frequently stopped singing and allowed the audience to take over. Mm. It was especially well-received during concerts in South America, and the band released a song as a single there. When Queen and Paul Rodgers performed the song, he sang almost none of the words and let the audience sing it all, continuing the tradition. Mm-hmm. When Queen and Adam Lambert performed it, Brian would play along to a projection of Freddie singing, which makes me sad. When they performed with Paul Rodgers during 2004 through 2008, Mercury was also projected during the show, but not in a round display as they used with the Adam Lambert. So a round display would be super cool, but any projection of Freddie Mercury doing this song would be cool. Because I have never had the pleasure of seeing Queen.
Oh, I've never had the pleasure. Great electric guitar work on this as well. This is a example where there's this part comes in. If you're not really listening, you could go, "Oh, there's like a little violin in there," and it's not. It's Brian.
Well, what it is and tell me if you okay. So like the neck pickup on a Les Paul, that distinctive kind of blues. What would you call that kind of tone?
I don't want
to say muddy.
Well, people call that the woman tone.
Hey,
that's what it's called. That's what class.
But that's what like the beginning of that solo is. It's the very he's got a really nice mellow, and then like you said, he kicks in with kind of the more trebly, high end.
Yeah,
and it's such a beautiful mix between the two. I'm like, oh my.
Oh my. Does anybody else pick the number, Lily?
No.
Okay. We're just going to go to the end.
Okay. Do you want to like maybe announce more about that?
Well, yes. Pick a number.
Anyone who just maybe tuned in.
17 and 37, and you're going to win this. A night.
Oh. It's upside down.
A night at the Upside Down Opera.
Oh, that's us.
That's us, all right.
We're the Upside Down Opera. Yeah, you're going to win a CD copy. I mean, it's unopened, guys. No, you know, I didn't tape it first.
It's pretty. It's shiny.
It's quite nice.
It's lovely.
Digital State of the Art Mastering by Bob Ludwig.
Ludwig, yeah.
Go ahead.
Anyway, the next song is Good Company.
Good Company. No. Isn't it ironic? They have a song called Good Company, but the same from Bad Company.
Bad Company, yeah.
Same, yeah, when I, yeah.
Coincidence?
No. Things that make you go, hmm.
Oh,
go
boy.
Ahead, Lily. I'm sorry.
Written and sung by May, who provides all vocals and plays a genuine George Formby ukulele Grill. Banjo. What is a ukulele banjo?
Well, it's a banjolele.
Ah,
a
banjolele.
It has... it's strung like a ukulele. It's tuned like a ukulele, but it's got that thing under the strings that gives it a little bit of that kind of
the
buzzing.
Twang.
A little bit of a buzzing kind of thing. Yeah.
Got you. The recording is remarkable for featuring an elaborate recreation of Dixieland-style jazz band. May composed the song on a banjo ukulele, but recorded the song with a regular ukulele instead. Mercury is not involved with the song's recording, making it one of the few Queen songs not to feature their lead singer. I really like banjolele.
Yeah, it's such a cool, like when it starts out, I'm like, what is that, a ukulele? Yeah.
A lot of the song sounds on that song that come in to kind of sound like clarinet and things like that. That is Brian playing around with different guitars through different amps. There's one sound on there is him playing through John Deacon's bass amp.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they just kept on playing around until they could kind of, you know, cop these sort of, you know, horn woodwind kind of things. It's a guitar masterpiece. It's really like, if you ever like kind of go like, oh, Brian May, like, he's okay, but I don't know, really pay attention to this record, because again, a lot of the stuff that you think is other instruments is Brian with that Red Special. It's just incredible.
The instrument.
So what do you got? What's the next one?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Never heard of it.
You have.
No.
You have. Is that the banjolele? Written by Mercury with the first guitar solo composed by May. All piano, bass, and drum parts, as well as the vocal arrangements, were thought up by Mercury on a daily basis and written down in blocks.
Do you like my comb?
Using note names instead of sheets. Anyway, he wrote it on a phone book. During the recording, the song became affectionately known as Fred's Thing to the band, and the title only emerged during the final sessions. The other members recorded their respective instruments with Fred's no concept thing. On how their tracks would be utilized in the final mix. Anyone else want to talk about it?
This is their signature song.
Right.
Yeah. That features like everything that they do, kind of like this, their magnum opus. You know, if somebody wanted to say, what's the Queen sound before they became a disco band? You just play that song.
Right.
That pretty much captures everything.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
Mercury refused to explain his composition about the song other than to say it was about relationships. The band is still protective of the song's secret. Brian May supports suggestions that the song contained veiled... I have stuff all over my hands. Veiled references to Mercury's personal traumas. He recalls Freddie was a very complex person, flippant and funny on the surface, but he concealed insecurities and problems in squaring up his life with his childhood. He never explained the lyrics, but I think he put a lot of himself into that song, which I have to agree, that's kind of weird. May, though, says the band had agreed that the core of a lyric was a private issue for the composer. In a BBC documentary about the making of Bohemian Rhapsody, Roger Taylor maintains that the true meaning of the song is fairly self-explanatory, with just a bit of nonsense in the middle. So, think
it's kind of a story.
Yeah.
And of course, it had a resurgence with Wayne's World.
Wayne's World. Party time. Excellent.
In 1992.
And then it had a resurgence with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes.
A few years ago.
What was that, 2018? I just got it.
This is one of those songs, and you know, Kevin, I'm sure, and you probably have the same thing. Like when you start getting into music and you hear it, you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is the okay. I'm grooving on. I think I understand what pop music is. Then that comes on. I know shit.
Yeah.
That's like that. It's so insane. I don't really know what to say about it that hasn't already been said.
But it was exciting, man.
Yeah.
Because it didn't follow any of the structure of all the stuff that was going on.
And it really
broke
holds you for, it's what, 6 minutes or something? How long is it?
I don't actually have the time on that, to be honest with you. I will find it.
But,
Hey, Lou, Lily's looking at her phone, gang. Hope that guy don't get mad.
I'm going to look at him while I do it.
There you
Please
go.
Please forgive us.
Bite me.
But you never, what I'm saying is you never get bored.
No.
It's not something that drones on and on and on. It flies by.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of looking forward to each section, and they just each section lasts just long enough.
Long enough to keep your interest, and then there's something new.
Yeah, something new.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about, 5 minutes and 55 seconds.
5 minutes. It's almost 6 minutes.
It's got a little bit of everything in there.
It does. It does go a little bit. Has anybody else participated in the contest?
No, just Bill Damiano.
Oh, Bill.
And he did not pick the correct number.
Okay.
Wow. Wow.
There is one more song. But...
There is always one more. Yes, there is. And that's it. Thanks, everybody. Good night. There it is. Okay, good.
Okay. If you would like to win a copy of A Night at the Opera.
Don't you want to talk about the last song?
We're going to.
Okay.
But I'm just reminding them again.
I get a
giant bag of with your name on it. Did you just shush me?
Yeah.
What do you got, Lily?
God save the queen.
Please, somebody save the queen. She needs all kind of help.
What?
May recorded a cover of God Save the Queen, the British national anthem, in 74 before their sheer heart attack tour. He played a guide piano,
queen.
Which was edited out later and added several
layers
of guitars. After the song was completed, it was played at virtually every Queen concert. When recording the track, May played a rough version on piano for RTB, the producer. And
Roy Thomas Baker!
And Mike Stone, the engineer. He called his own skills on the piano subpar at the time. He performed the song live on the roof of Buckingham Palace for the Queen's Golden Jubilee in 2002.
That's nice.
May had stated that he performed the song on the roof of Buckingham Palace as homage to Jimi Hendrix's version of the Star Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got that drift. Yeah, sure.
Legit.
Sure.
And there it is.
Yeah, that, there you are. God save, kind of, yeah. Okay, Queen, God save the Queen.
Oh, I never made the connection.
So it's like a, you know, like a double meaning there.
Oh. All your papers are everywhere.
I was trying to be dramatic.
Well, mission accomplished.
I'm not going to do this day in music.
No?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
But I am going to do...
What are you going to do?
Let me tell you what I'm going to do.
Tell me
I'm going to tell you what I'm going
to do. What are you going to do?
1975.
Uh-huh.
I was not born.
I was. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about music. So
I was this many years old.
The Billboard number one songs.
Yes.
Angie Baby by Helen Reddy.
Ooh.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by Elton John.
Right.
Mandy by Barry Manilow. Mm. Please, Mr. Postman by The Carpenters.
I love that song.
Laughter in the Rain by the one and only Neil Sedaka.
Yes.
A Fire by Ohio Players. You're No Good, Linda Ronstadt. Pick Up the Pieces, Average White Band. Best of My Love, The Eagles. Have You Ever Been Mellow?
Yeah.
Olivia Newton-John. Black Water by the Doobie Brothers. My Eyes Adore You by the Frankie Valli. Lady Marmalade.
I love that one.
La Belle. As in Patti LaBelle.
La Belle.
Loving You, Minnie Riperton's been parodied on South Park and things like that. Philadelphia Freedom by the Elton John Band.
Oh. Ooh. Wow. Did they ever go on to do anything else?
Do you know this? Remember this one?
Here we go.
Hey, won't you play another
Oh my
Somebody
God.
Oh, yeah. Done Somebody Wrong song?
I know that one.
B.J. Thomas, who just passed away this past
yes,
year.
God bless him.
He Don't Love You Like I Do, by Tony Orlando and Dawn.
I love Dawn.
Goodness. Wait, you forgot Tony Orlando.
I don't love him.
Shining Star by Earth, Wind, and Fire. These are all like classic tunes. Before the Next Teardrop Falls, Freddie Fender. Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
Yeehaw.
John Denver. Sister Golden Hair by
America.
By America, whoa. Yeah. Love Will Keep Us Together by the Captain and Tennille. Mm-hmm. This is like a lot of classic stuff. Listen to What the Man Said by Paul McCartney and Wings. Do 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 the hustle.
Do you guys know the hustle?
By Van McCoy and the Soul City Symphony.
I
One of These Nights by the Eagles, Jive Talkin' by the Bee Gees, Fallen in Love. I love this name, Hamilton, Joe Frank, and Reynolds.
That's fancy.
Wow.
Get Down Tonight by KC and the Sunshine Band. Rhinestone Cowboy. Fame by David Bowie. I'm Sorry by John Denver. Bad Blood by Neil Sedaka.
Wow.
Island Girl by Elton John.
Yes.
That's the Way I Like It by KC and the Sunshine Band. Fly Robin Fly by Silver.
Robin Fly.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that song. Amen. Let's Do It Again by the Staple Singers.
Wow.
So, like, those were the big songs. Those are all the number ones. Most popular television shows were All in the Family, Rich
Boy
Man, the Poor
Glenn
Man,
Miller played.
Laverne and Squirrely, Laverne and Shirley,
Maud,
Bionic Woman, Phyllis, Sanford and Son, Rhoda, $6 Million Man, and Happy Days.
All good shows.
Yep.
Sunday, Monday.
Awesome. Big best film Oscar winner was Godfather 2.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And
musical.
What was that?
Broadway show. Whatever.
Yeah, the Broadway show is The Wiz.
Why would you have a Broadway show about going to the bathroom?
There's a double meaning in that.
Is there? Hey now.
Pet Rocks came out.
I had one of them.
Yeah, there was a Pet Rocks, Caring for Pet Rocks, invention created by Gary Dahl, but also claimed by PCM website owner Joe Hummel, who sold them as a preteen in the early 70s. Betamax videotape was invented. The Herman Goltz company introduced the gourmet jelly bean.
Oh, wow.
I love gourmet jelly beans.
Yep.
This is wild, wacky
stuff. The Ford F-150 was introduced.
Really? 1975.
The Kool-Aid Man began appearing in commercials for Kool-Aid, although the smiling pitcher was the face of Kool-Aid since 1954.
Okay.
The laser printer was invented.
1975.
That's magical.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger, is a big scandal. Who played the Lone Ranger on for 169 episodes and two feature films in the 50s, was sued by the Rather Corporation, who owned the Lone Ranger character by copyright. Although forever typecast, he proudly carried the role in character and made appearances as the Lone Ranger. After the suit, he wore wrap-around sunglasses instead of
that's right. That's right. I do remember that.
This is also the year that Jimmy Hoffa disappeared.
Or did he?
No, he disappeared.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I don't know if what happened, though.
He's not dead.
No.
He's working at Burger King.
I was going to say, I think I saw him.
And one of the famous quotes from 1975, I'd rather be dead than sing Satisfaction when I'm 45.
Who said that?
Mick Jagger.
Sir Mick.
How old are you now?
Yeah.
70?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try one more time. Does anybody guess anything
other
than Bill Damiano?
Please.
We only got Bill Damiano.
Oh, Bill, God. I'll message you after the thing, okay? Hit me up. We'll work something out.
We reward loyalty.
Maybe people don't like Queen. Maybe you guys don't like Queen. Maybe you think Queen sucks.
We reward loyalty.
If you don't like Queen, stop listening. Oh, wait, you're not anyway.
Oh, yes, that requires one of these.
No, please don't do that.
Might get us watchers.
That's true.
That says magic spell, but almost some of it reminds me of this beam from Star Trek.
Yeah, it definitely does.
You know, but anyways.
Hey, everybody, tune in and listen to our sound effects.
So guys, go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Go to LouLombardiMusic.com. If you want to get some more information on what we do, be able to get on the list to find out about giveaways and things like that. Shout out to... We okay?
I just dropped my phone.
Shout out to Wolf's Customs.
You should have been watching it.
Shout out to Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. RockRageRadio.com. Download the app. Lily, what you got going on this week?
I will be seeing the Butcher Babies on Wednesday at Jurgles, and I have the meet and greet, so I'll be playing Pictionary with them as well. So watch for photos and video of that.
Nice.
And also listen to my show on Thursdays, Hot Licks with Lily Six on Rock Ridge Radio. You can download the app for free, Rock Ridge Radio, or go to rockridgeradio.com.
Okay. And Pittsburgh, Kevin, you got anything you want to add?
Yeah, this weekend I want to announce I'll be doing some laundry. So, you know, if you guys want to join me. Bring your own quarters,
can you do
please.
My laundry?
I can do your laundry.
Okay.
All right, guys. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us tonight. Have a great week, and we'll catch you all in the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.